Back together again, you and I, wrapping up a very busy week. Friday, February 2nd, 2024 on Connecticut Today. We kicked off the show looking at the latest immigration controversy in the tri-state area that's also making national news. Affinity Grow managing partner Ray Pantolina talked about the recreational and medical marijuana markets and industries in Connecticut, including new retail locations in New Haven and Bridgeport. And former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep Chris Caruso stopped by with his weekly update and a look at Bridgeport politics. So this weekend, particularly on the Sunday talk shows, the Sunday gab shows, be it Fox News Sunday or State of the Union on CNN or NBC's Meet the Press, CBS's show, ABC's This Week, Face the Nation on CBS, whatever you like to watch, if you partake of those shows, there's a chance, although we don't know whether it'll be released or not, there's a chance that you may see our junior U.S. Senate member, Democrat Chris Murphy, opining about how wonderful of an immigration and border security bill he has produced in talks with other members in the Senate, including Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona and Jim Lankford of Oklahoma. And they're all out there now saying, hey, there's a lot of misinformation about this. The numbers aren't right and wrong and whatever. Here's the bottom line, and good God, do I wish and pray and hope that I'm wrong on this. I don't just do this for bombast. Honestly, I hope and I wish and I pray that I am as wrong as you can be on this. But I got to tell you, I don't care what they put out there. Prove me wrong if you can. Please, I'm begging you. You people in D.C., members of our delegation, Chris Murphy, Richard Blumenthal, Jim Himes, Rosa DeLauro, Joe Courtney, John Larson, anybody, Johanna Hayes, anybody in our delegation, prove me wrong, but I still don't think we are serious about handling the migrant problem. I just don't. Now, again, I ran down what some of the early things about this bill in D.C. are going to say. But here's the bigger problem. Here's the bigger illustration about this. And Washington and the men and women on both sides of the aisle, they can bloviate all they want about the border bill. And let's see what it does. Let's see what's in it. Again, Senators Lankford, Sinema, and Chris Murphy are all saying, well, don't take this at face value until you see the text of it. Okay, I'm willing to give them that. But there's another level of how we deal with immigration and migrants and illegals and undocumented. There's the federal level of what we're doing actually at the border, which, you know, has a lot to be considered. And then what happens in your local area, your city, your town, and particularly what happens in some of these sanctuary cities. Now, a lot of you follow the news very carefully. I know that, especially if you have a family, as I do, relatives, friends, former and current co-workers in New York City. And now, again, we can talk all we want about trying to keep illegals out of the country. And again, I'm not anti-migrant. I am pro 100% legal immigration. And I'm pro 100% people getting in who have legitimate, verifiable claims of asylum according to international law. We got all that. Check those boxes. But it is people, if you can use that term, that beat up a couple of New York cops that I have absolutely no respect for as human beings, and I frankly don't care about, and should be thrown out of this country as quick as possible. What am I talking about? Let me go over this story for you, because again, the federal government, even if it straightens out its act at the border per se on immigration, that's only half the glass there. The glass is still half empty, even if you think it's half full. The glass is still half empty if we have judges who believe in giving violent illegals slaps on the wrists who believe in not taking into account the effort that our fine men and women, police officers, in blue in all the major cities, including New York, if they don't take into account what they put on the line to ensnare these pieces of filth, I don't know what we're going to do. How about this? In the New York Post, and by the way, this is how bad this is getting now. Usually immigration stories that might not reflect well on the White House, up until about a month or two ago, you never saw them in the major networks. You never saw them on NBC or MSNBC or CBS or ABC. Now, a friend of mine messaged me the other morning. She said, geez, did you see the Today Show? The Today Show. All sunshine and roses. The Today Show actually did a segment on New York cops getting beat up by illegals in broad daylight. And I messaged her back. I said, yeah, I'm kind of shocked. What does that tell you? But how about this? Police believe four of the migrants arrested in a cop beatdown near Times Square have already fled on a bus to California. How about that, Maud? Police believe, this is in the New York Post, this is a story from yesterday. Police believe four migrants arrested in a cop beatdown near Times Square fled on a bus to California. Yeah, immigration policy. That's pretty good, ain't it? Huh? Yeah. And by the way, the reason this story is gaining strength, or the oxygen it is nationwide, it's because it's all on video. You got a group of these thugs beating up two cops who were trying to break up a fight in Times Square the other day in broad daylight. Undoubtedly with parents and kids walking around. There you go. Four of the five migrants cut loose without bail after allegedly ganging up on two New York cops near Times Square, maybe on the run. I'll read that for you again. Four of the five migrants cut loose without bail after allegedly ganging up on two New York City cops near Times Square, maybe on the run. Cops think the group could have hopped on a bus bound for California on Wednesday after giving phony names to, you ready for this? Of course, a church-affiliated nonprofit that helps migrants get rides out of the city. The four accused cop attackers, believed to have skipped town, were charged with assault on a police officer and obstruction immediately after the shocking caught-on-video attack Saturday in Midtown. It's on video, folks. This isn't he said, she said. It's on video. And yet, they're not being held in jail. Oh, but this immigration bill, that's going to fix everything. Yeah. 19-year-old Darwin Andres Gomez, 19-year-old Kelvin Cervita Arrocha, 21-year-old Wilson Juarez, and 24-year-old Yorman Reveron were released without bail by a Manhattan judge after beating up two New York City police officers, punching them, kicking them. It's on video. I'm not making this up. Oh, you're just a right winger, Paul. No, I'm not a right winger. I'm a common sense winger. There used to be a time where we would hold thugs like this in prison for at least a few days, or at least set some sort of bail. But again, The new lefty do-gooders are like, well, no, cash bail, if you can't afford, this is the line you get now, well, you know, cash bail is not fair if you don't have any cash. Okay, then don't be a crook. I know. Who am I to say it? A suburban white guy. Don't commit a crime. Yeah, I know. What's wrong with you, Paul? 24-year-old Yorman Reveron, who had prior arrests on his rap sheet, was put on supervised release. So, Sources said hightailing it out of the city would likely be a violation of his court-ordered release. They're not even holding these guys. The supervision was ordered for Reveron because he has, you ready for this? You're sitting down, Maud? He's got two open criminal cases already in Manhattan. Folks, I'm telling you, be careful when you go to New York City now. This is not like the tail end of the Giuliani years or even the Mike Bloomberg years. I told my dear friends in New York City, I said, if you start the pendulum swinging back the other way, voting for that dullard, that dolt, that moron, Bill de Blasio, watch what happens to your city. Reveron has two open cases in New York, including charges he slugged a Nordstrom employee while trying to steal $130 in November. He's also accused of punching a worker at Macy's Herald Square store last month while trying to rob the retailer with two others. But, you know, why hold these people in jail, right? A fifth asylum-seeking suspect, yes, he wants asylum, 22-year-old Johan Boada, was hit with the same charges and was also released without bail. Two more migrants, 21-year-old Jandri Barros and 24-year-old Yohenry Brito, were arrested by cops later that night. Dozens of New York officers and representatives for the Police Benevolent Association packed the courtroom for Brito's arraignment Thursday as he became the first of those charged to be ordered held on bail. Oh, no, they held this poor guy on bail. Where's UNICEF? Where's the ACLU? The Manhattan DA's office said the $15,000 cash bail, or $15,000 bond, was warranted because Brito was ID'd on the video footage because of a tattoo. He has four prior arrests for larceny, with two open cases and a guilty plea on disorderly conduct in September, according to sources and a criminal complaint. So one out of the five or six is held slightly. The other four or five, they're going to California, man. Oh, my God. I'm telling you, all the bloviating, all the hot air, all the chest thumping, we're going to hear over the next few days about how great this border deal is, and the president has the authority to do this or do that. It doesn't matter. Thousands of illegals are still going to be let into the country, and both sides in Washington are assuming that you're too dumb to realize the charade that's going on here. All right, we'll get back to open phones later on this hour, and when we do, it'll be right here at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Once again, 203-333-9422. There is a new marijuana producer in the state, Affinity Grow. It's located in Portland, the town of Portland. In addition to the facility, they also operate two dispensaries, one in New Haven and that recently opened superstore in Bridgeport, on the Fairfield Line. And joining us right now to talk about that facility, the Portland facility, what the deal is generally with the adult recreational use marijuana market and the medicinal market, too, in Connecticut, how we're doing there, is Ray Pantolina. And Ray is the managing partner of Affinity. Hey, Ray, it's Paul. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great, Paul. Thanks so much for having us on to have a chat.
Yeah, so now that we're multiple months into this whole thing, a year and change, I've even lost count. The macro look at this, Ray, encompassing the adult recreational use and the medicinal use, supply and stuff, how is Connecticut doing when it comes to marijuana?
Last year, as you know, Paul, the recreational adult use part of the program rolled out on January 10th. At the time, there were only 18 dispensaries, and I believe 12 or 13 of them converted to what's called a hybrid dispensary that would do both medical and adult use. So we started out with about 12 last January, and I believe as of today, we're pretty close to 30.
How is the licensing, from your point of view, Ray, how is the licensing aspect of this? How has it gone? Rough spots, kind of a learning curve here. How is the state doing with that, do you think?
Well, the state, it started with the legislature, and it followed up with the state, the Department of Consumer Protection. They took a lot of time to develop the adult use program. The Department of Consumer Protection was given their marching orders to roll out the program. I'd have to say it went pretty smooth last January and February. It was a pretty heavy lift to get this going. Is it perfect? No, but over time, it's going to things will smooth out, and I think you'll see a pretty good program here in the state.
So what are the points, Ray Pantolina, that need to be smoothed out as we speak? No surprise to me that you said it's a work in progress, but what are some of the areas, maybe a couple of three areas, that people should know about that are still kind of being worked on here at what I guess is still a relatively early stage?
So there's currently about 30 dispensaries that have their final license and are open for business in the state currently. However, there's a pathway for up to 100 dispensaries that have been given either a provisional license or have a pathway to open a retail. So you'll see in the next 12 to 24 months a pretty big expansion of retail dispensaries all across the state. That's one of the things that you'll see a big change. Mm-hmm. The other is that right now there's six producers in the state, and in Connecticut, to sell any product in a dispensary, it has to be grown in Connecticut. The product is grown, it's harvested, it's tested by an outside third-party testing lab to make sure it's a clean product. It's packaged and then sent to each individual dispensary. There's currently six that are operating. There were four before the adult use market rolled out a year ago. Last year, Affinity Grow became the fifth grower, the fifth producer in the state. And there's a sixth producer that will have product to market probably within the next couple of months.
How difficult of a process is this, Ray? And you know, during the whole run-up to this, I was joking on the air and with guests and with listeners who know, you know, this is not going back to, for me, you know, and people I knew in my dorm when I was at college, you know, setting up a couple of grow lights in the closet you're not using and hoping that your RA or the campus police don't see it. I mean, this to me, just the mode of what you folks do at Affinity, the growing and the processing of this, it's very intricate, isn't it? And how do you do that and still measure and control, for example, the THC levels and all this?
So the grow process is a very sophisticated process and system. All but one of the growers in the state, they grow indoors under very controlled conditions. They grow year-round. They control everything from temperature to light, humidity. It's not just throwing a couple of seeds in the ground and watching it grow.
No, no, I guess not. Huh?
They literally have people with advanced degrees and scientists and agronomists that watch and nurture the plants, and it's really a science to what goes on there, and it's a pretty impressive operation if you ever get a chance to see one.
I remember a couple of months ago, Ray, and Ray Pantolina is the guest. He's the managing partner of Affinity Grow, the newest Connecticut marijuana producer. We'll talk about their facility here in Fairfield County in just a moment. But, Ray, back to the matter at hand here. I remember a couple of months ago, maybe, I saw stories that the state was kind of worried about supply here, supply on the retail level versus the people who do need it medically, and they're supposed to be first in line. How is that shaken out? What are we looking at here? Will there be occasional dips and peaks in the supplies?
So, as I mentioned earlier, we went from 18 dispensaries to 30, being served by originally four growers and then to six. So the supply, to, you know, 30 dispensaries, it's a heavier lift to get them out. The state has given provisional licenses to over a dozen more grow facilities for the state. Some of them are under construction now. Some of them are in the planning stages. So there's a pathway for quite a bit more product coming on. They anticipated, the state very smartly anticipated that there, as the program grows, you were going to have more supply. So they put a pathway in to have, I think, 11, 12, maybe even 13 more growers in the state. As far as the medical patients, that's really everybody's primary concern. The growers, the retailers, we have medical preservation plans. The medical patients get priority when they come into any dispensary. They have their own check-in lanes to be checked into the dispensary, their own checkout lines. Mm. They have their own designated inventories that only the medical patients can buy from. And we try to make sure that the medical patients come first and that they're taken care of. And the adult use population, they have their own inventory to come in. And, you know, we're going through growing pains. And as each of these other 11 or 12 grow facilities come on board, there will be more than enough product on the market.
You have two new facilities, one in New Haven County, and one kind of near us here in Bridgeport, on the Bridgeport-Fairfield line. Mm-hmm. Ray, looking at those facilities and looking at what you're doing right now, obviously this is a business too, despite the, or besides, we should say, the medical marijuana part of it. The retail to me is fascinating. What are you seeing in both your established businesses and your new locations? From consumers, data, average purchase, do you have any demographics? I find that fascinating. And anything you could share with us?
Well, the demographics are everyone from 21 to 81. Hmm. We even have a couple people in their late 80s. It covers every area of the demographic here in Bridgeport and in New Haven. There's there's legacy people from the old days. There's new people that are trying cannabis, using cannabis pretty effectively on the medical side. And for the adult use, cannabis has already been here in the state for decades and decades. It's now being provided through licensed dispensaries in a very thoughtful, regulated manner. It's done in such a way that people, when they walk in, they know it's been tested by an outside third-party testing lab, and they're not getting anything with pesticides, insecticide, or any other contaminants, and they can feel pretty comfortable that they're getting a nice, clean product here.
What, Ray, any split or any trends you see of people who are using it by smoking it that way, or maybe using the oils, or maybe the edibles? Any interesting trends there, or is it just what you expected?
Oh, it's what we expected. Most people prefer smoking. That probably makes up 60% of the market. The next most popular mode of action is vaping. The vapes come in second. And then, of course, people do, on the recreational side, people like the edibles with the gummies. And on the adult side, it's a little bit of everything. It's still predominantly flower, but there's a lot of people with tablets, capsules, tinctures, depending on their what's going on in their life, they can use different modes of action to get different relief forms.
And finally, Ray, I know in covering this from kind of the political and the nuts and bolts side, as I do here on the show and speak with lawmakers, I know there was a tendency, Ray, as all states do, they try and find the sweet spot as far as taxes are concerned. Taxes from your end of it, the producer, and then all the way down to the end of the retailer. And, you know, New York is looking at what we're doing. We looked at Massachusetts. Rhode Island is looking at everybody. What are your thoughts there? Is it about right, you think? Are there going to be some adjustments to this or what?
So hopefully they won't look to Massachusetts and New York if they were. Connecticut is pretty much the gold standard, and most states reach out to Connecticut, to the Department of Consumer Protection, drug control, legislators, to get their programs correct, to fix anything they did wrong. And any of the new states coming out, I even get calls from the new states asking for comment when they do things. From a tax standpoint, smartly and rightfully so, there's still no sales tax on the medical marijuana patients. It's treated just like a prescription medicine with no sales tax. The adult use side of the business generates all of the tax revenue. It's somewhere, depending on the product you get, it's somewhere around 20% is the tax. 20% does add quite a bit of cost to each purchase. So the tax is just on the adult use side, no tax on the medical side. Is it about right? I would say it's a hair more than it should be.
Mm-hmm.
They have plans for that revenue. They're a lot smarter people than I am up in Hartford, and hopefully the taxes won't go up any higher than what they are now.
Name of the company is Affinity Grow, the newest Connecticut marijuana producer located in Portland, including their production facility. They also have two dispensaries, one in New Haven and one recently opened down around here, the Superstore in Bridgeport on the Fairfield Line. Ray Pantolina has been the guest. He's the managing partner of Affinity. Ray, good to chat with you. You have the number now, so whenever you want to come on, feel free to give us a call.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate your time.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Ray. Ray Pantolina, managing partner of Affinity. Interesting that he said he thought the tax could come down just a little. And it's interesting, this cha-cha that's going around trying to balance the amount of medical product you have with the amount of recreational product you have. Because by law, you can't, and I'm glad he mentioned that, anything sold here in Connecticut, it's got to be grown here. You can't import it. All right, back to open phones a little bit later on, and a bunch of stories I'll have toward the end of the show, many of which are making me bang my head. Here, hear this? That's me banging my head on the wall in utter disbelief as to how many dumb people we have walking the face of the earth. But I digress. We'll get to those later to wrap up the week. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Our buddy, our pal Chris Caruso's here, former Democratic State Rep Bridgeport and observer of all things in the Park City.
What a segue, dumb people, and then I go on.
Well, no, come on now. No, you're like me. You sit around and shake your head at all the stunods out there, right?
Of course,
Oh, my God. Chris.
What's got you worked up, Paul?
Chris.
I hear you.
It's the whole thing with I'll get into it later, but it's the Taylor Swift thing with some of these Republicans.
I know, yeah.
Oh my God!
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, Ronald Reagan is spinning
rabbits down the hole.
Ronald Reagan is spinning in his grave right now.
That's what happens. People get distracted very easily, you know.
Yeah. Oh, believe me, I know. Speaking of, with our dear friend, the guy who played Apollo Creed, Carl Weathers, passed away today. He did that in the first four Rocky movies. So now, Chris Caruso, we have a comparison between the first four Rocky movies and now round four with John Gomes and Joe Ganim. Chris, are you surprised that Mr. Gomes is doing this or not?
No, it's the song that never ends, frankly. And, listen, he has a right to do it. you know, I think he thought it through. I know people have spoken to him to try and, you know, reconsider his decision. This was, you know, before it had to be made, and that he made, I think it was on the 31st of January, and he's made it. And now, you know, hey, it's moving forward. You know, the judge did order it, you know, if you remember, in his decision.
Yeah.
They had to redo the primary on the 23rd, and then the judge ordered the general election on the 27th because, okay, you have the Democratic nominee chosen, but you also have a Republican candidate and you have the independent party. So it had to go through unless John decided not to do it. So, you know, in all honesty, it was mandated by the judge, and so they're doing it, and we'll see what happens on the 27th. I think that's mm-hmm. where it all lies.
And, you know, as our friend Lenny Grimaldi said yesterday, Chris, I don't know whether you heard him, he did bring out a point, though, that said, okay, it's 3-0, you know, for Joe Gannon, but two of those three wins, and he is 3-0 against John Gomes, but two of those three did technically have a limited audience of possible voters, of registered Democrats. So now you're going into round four, which is a second general election, and that is opened up, Chris, to a broader section of the electorate.
Oh, it absolutely does. You know, the uniqueness with any primary is you identify the people you know within that party and you pull them out. With the general election, it's different. It's harder to identify those people you know individually, so the field is much larger, and so the turnout should be larger as well. In this case, you know, you have, I think, over 22,000 unaffiliated or independent voters in the city. Now, you're not going to get anywhere near that number out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a percentage of it could make a difference. There's no question about it. So, you know, it's, again, you know, both groups, both campaigns are going to work. They've got, what, about three and a half weeks to do it.
Yeah.
And on the 27th, the decision will be made, and then we'll move forward at that point. Maybe in some ways there had to be this bloodletting. There had to be this get it out of your system and kind of move forward.
You know, Chris, also to that end, a couple of days ago when I played kind of dueling clips of both the mayor and John Gomes, the Gomes campaign kept emphasizing, Chris, the word us. They don't listen to us when we complain. Who do you think, Chris Caruso, who are they referring to with us? Who is us that the Gomes camp keeps referring to?
I think it's you know, the average person in the city of Bridgeport. And I think that's what they're referring to, us being the opposite to those in power. And I think that's what they're referring to. But us is a very broad word, and I don't know how deep that resentment is. You know, I said from the beginning, it was not a movement. That if it was a movement, if people were really angry and bitter, you know, and wanted change, and there was a feeling of revolution, you know, John Gomes would have won by probably 2,000 votes. It would have been a landslide. And usually in elections, all the ones I've been involved or have seen, if people are coming to the polls in big numbers, it usually is against the incumbent. They're coming out for a reason. They're determined. There's a purpose. There's a direction they want. And that just wasn't the case. I think, frankly, as I could see it, you know, the Gannon campaign didn't run a very effective campaign. And there's an anti-vote out there toward incumbency. I think it's built into the soup, if you will. There's just so many people that don't like incumbents, and no matter what, will vote against them. And I think that's what came out in those first two, the first primary and the general election. I think it was the anti-incumbent vote, which exists, and in turn, the Gannon campaign didn't counter that well enough. Now, in this last primary, the Gannon campaign seemed to be much more organized, mm-hmm. much more focused, and you saw a higher turnout of voters. And you know, the number for him increased substantially, where John's number dropped. So looking at it statistically over the last, well, let's see, I ran in 2003, 2007. I lost by about 200, anywhere from 250 to 280. Marilyn Moore lost in 2019 by 250. John Gomes lost by 250 in the first primary. Mm. Then he lost by 175. So the numbers don't lie. You know, there's an anti-incumbent vote, and the margin of the loss was about 200 votes. So I think Ganim saw that in his primary. He refocused his campaign. He went after John a lot differently, you know, started to define him more, challenge him more, mm-hmm. question him more. And I think it had the results. Now, with 3.5 weeks left, though, it's incumbent upon John Gomes to do the same thing and have a message that people can resonate with. And if he can't do that, then I think it's going to be another defeat. But, you know, keep in mind what brought us to this entire thing, Paul, this yeah. entire four-way process, was the abuse of absentee mm-hmm. ballots. And it was on both sides. And I've said this publicly. I said it the other night at a legislative forum. Both sides were involved in this abuse of absentee ballots. That's just the fact. I'm not going to sit here and lie or tell a story. It's a fact. And as a result of that problem that we saw, in particular the Ganim campaign, that someone, you know, stuffing the ballot box. That's what if you didn't have that camera and the footage,
yeah,
life would have gone on, right?
Yeah, yeah. Chris, before we wrap up here, the General Assembly is starting up, and we're seeing an interesting dynamic here of both Governor Lamont and the state comptroller, Sean Scanlon, and the Republicans coming out and saying, hey, we're finally paying off our bills here. Money is still tight, but don't get rid of these so-called guardrails that have been in effect now for around 8 or 10 years or whatever, because the process is working. But there's a heavy pushback, Chris, from the social service groups and many people in the governor's own party. What are your thoughts on this? This should be interesting.
Well, you know, the guardrails definitely have helped. You know, if I was in the legislature when I was and we had the guardrails, it would have made life a lot easier. However, I think guardrails are guardrails, and I think you can make adjustments to them so that they still meet the purpose that they're intended to, which is to restrain an overabundance of spending. But there's also a need to address certain spending items that you have to address, you know, something that affects people's lives directly. So I think you've got to look at it. I think there should be an honest discussion, but in the end, the guardrails should stay. I believe, you know, they need to almost be as strong as they currently are mm-hmm. with some adjustments to it. But I think it's like anything else. You've got to review it, and you've got to and look at it in its totality, because each year things change, issues change, conditions change, concerns change. And I think it's always good to do that. The truth be told, though, even with the Democrats in office, you know, the Republicans would oppose any changes in the guardrails.
Sure.
And they're not going to have enough votes to overturn the governor. Let's say he vetoes a bill. They won't have enough to overturn it. The Democrats don't have a veto-proof margin in the House or the Senate. So I think the guardrails are here to stay. But I think it's important that the governor have a sit-down with both sides and see where some modifications could be made that don't throw the guardrails out, but make it a little bit more livable for areas where there needs to be some type of spending. And there are areas, let's mm-hmm. be honest, there are. But again, I think that's part of sitting in discussion. Conversation isn't bad. But I think in the end, there's a lot of posturing going on. But the guardrails will stay because the votes aren't there to do them in.
Good stuff. Chris Caruso, thank you. Have a good weekend, and we'll chat with you next week. Thank you, Chris.
Yep. Take care.
Take care.